Hi there, I'm Subha, a career growth coach, and this is season 5 of Small Talk with Raincraft with...
I'm Hasita. I'm a marketing consultant at Motley Crue, and I'm so excited. Are we at season 5 already?
Can you believe it? Please do look us up and catch earlier episodes too. But let's get on with this one. Are you starting to feel like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole in your career? Join us today as we decode the art of career transitions and try and guide you through the maze of switching roles, industries, or just the context of the work you're doing. Hasita, have you ever been at crossroads in your career, wondering whether it's time to change paths? I hear this often from mid-career professionals and even young folks who have started out but are feeling a bit unsure about the choices that they've made.
Why, just yesterday I was feeling at a crossroads, Subha, and you know it's not the first time. There's so many opportunities and there's so many paths that we can take today. I think when I was just about going into graduate level education, the only options ahead of us were engineering and medicine. And within 10 years, that has changed so much. So if, you know, we are not feeling like we are in that place of a transition, then I think that would be a much bigger concern. It is a tough spot though, because, I mean, when there are opportunities and choices, there's also the fact that we have done something for a certain amount of time. And now what do we choose if, you know, we should go with something else? And frankly, how do we even know that what we are doing is not the good enough thing for us? You know?
Exactly. So maybe let's see what career transition really means, right? Because changing your career is not easy. It's like you said, you've built years of professional training or expertise, and it can be quite daunting if you have to one day switch to an organization in a very different industry. But it can also be a period of really exciting learning and self-discovery and growth. So maybe let's unpack some of the strategies around this, or firstly, even just the challenges around this, what leads to a transition, then what you can do about it. And I'm sure we have enough personal experience in...
Yes. In fact, I was going to ask you that. You've made a huge transition. Yeah. What was your trigger? What was your thought process? How did you know that you're over something that you've done for a good, more than a decade, almost two?
That's the starting point, that there is typically some trigger. And that trigger could be various things. And I think for me, it was a combination of work and home, if I could call it, or life outside of work. Mm. And at work, the usual triggers are, I mean, the simplest trigger is, let's say, compensation, or you didn't get the role that you wanted, or the reward that you were promised, or, you know, you have a really, really toxic manager. We've spoken about that at length earlier.
Yeah.
You know, those are some of the things that would be a very maybe quick trigger.
More obvious trigger.
Yeah, mm-hmm. More obvious, and it's something that it happens and you're reacting mm-hmm. to it. Then there are triggers that happen over a period of time. It mm-hmm. kind of keeps adding up, and then, you know, you reach a point where you say, let me take a call on this, or something's bothering me. So that could be because you're really not feeling like you're growing
yeah.
in that position. You feel like I'm coming in every day and I'm giving it my all, and what am I getting back? And so that's a trigger that builds up over a period of time, because you start maybe also seeing peers are doing something new. The industry is evolving in a way in which maybe your organization is not keeping up.
Yeah.
And there are shiny new objects out there. And the deeper ones, the ones slightly tougher to identify, are where it either has to do with, family considerations, and more often, it also has to do with the fact that you're just not happy coming into that space. You know, the kind of work that's being done, the organizational vision, the value system that the organization now seems to have, which could have undergone a drastic change, right?
Yeah.
Because of business model changes, because of the environment, etc. Let's say even pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, there could have been huge shifts in how a company is run and how that culture is grown. And so that could be something that starts to gnaw at you that I need to take a deep, hard look. The other more personal aspect which has cropped up for many folks is that, hey, there is another way to do this, right? There is a life where I could potentially work from home more, be more integrated with family life. I could have the flexibility that earlier the job didn't provide. And I've shown that I can be as good in this model, but the organization is not supporting it anymore.
Right. And maybe to some extent, even a newfound awareness of one's own potential, right? Like we get to a point and then we realize we don't want to do the thing that got us there anymore. And we've grown into new things, perhaps new interests. Frankly, even a new expression of that potential as well. And you're right, those are very, very small shifts. And the only way to know that that has taken place is the disappointment with what is.
Correct, correct. And it's a very small shift because one of the interesting things about going to work is that whatever you have planned will fill the day.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm hearing from, you know, some coaches now that it's not taking me 8-9 hours to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
And there is opportunity to do more. And so if I can do more, why do the same, more of the same? Like, can I explore other opportunities out there and really see what is my potential, which includes maybe chasing an idea that's been sitting in the back of your head, or challenging yourself to new roles, which mean a lot of hours spent in learning itself.
Right, right. And that's just the awareness part, right? Like we know that there's something that's maybe calling us away from what we are doing, if not towards something else, but at least that awareness is there.
And there could also be the pull. Like you want to specifically add something to your resume, yeah. Or, you know, you've worked with a bunch of startups and you want to add a couple of big names to your portfolio.
Right.
You want to work with certain brands. There are so many who in the tech industry are so keen to, let's say, have that Google or Microsoft or Facebook on their resume, at least for, or even Amazon.
Right.
To, because it means something to say you've been there and survived.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, again, career is a very long-term, you know, kind of situation. It's not as simple as showing up at a different workplace on a Monday morning. Correct. And now that we know that, I think the biggest hindrance I find is simply that I don't know how to do anything else.
Mm.
And let's just say on a given work day, there's not always enough focused headspace to explore something else. And it's almost like you are probably at a middle management level in place one. And then in place two, you're pretty much starting from scratch. You're an intern almost. So just as a mindset level challenge, I find that that does come up. How do you make space for these two different identities?
Very true. And it takes us back to a fundamental concept of having a growth mindset. Those who can embrace it are willing to say that, okay, there are challenges and I am ready to learn, and my identity is not tied to being the world's greatest coder.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty lies when you've tied your identity to the work that you do. I'm a great designer, I'm a great coder, I'm a great analyst. And so you can't even imagine a world when you're not doing one of these things.
Right.
But when you are able to go below and say, okay, what are the skill sets that lie beneath? And that takes introspection. It takes time to generate that awareness for yourself. What we spoke about till now, it's happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's pushing you to this precipice, and now you've got to make some decisions.
Right.
And so that becomes the toughest part, because it looks like you are actually at the edge of the cliff and you're like, I've come till here being really good at doing certain things, and now I have to fall all the way to the bottom and start again.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And there's a interesting bit I heard from Richard Koch. He's the one who wrote about the 80-20 principle. And I think now he's a very successful investor, etc. also. But he started as a history major.
Wow.
Right? I think many of us who haven't studied history or don't have a deep interest think of it as learning a bunch of stuff that already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like a set of facts.
Yeah.
But he says that history is a lot about what he calls counterfactuals. That what else could have happened?
Mm-hmm.
Why did this happen? And so those are very difficult questions, but they make you think about various scenarios and possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they make you analyze not just human behavior, but maybe economic conditions and geopolitical conditions and all the factors that came into play. And he says right now, venture capital investing is all about scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So I am uniquely positioned because I have that skill.
And that's not something you come to a conclusion on one morning. Right?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a long period of just figuring out that these two dots seem to connect at this very specific space and time. And then, of course, my own interest and abilities as well.
Correct. My transition was also, if you look at it now in hindsight, it was pretty drastic. There were those initial moments where I said, hey, 15 years, all I've been is a banker. And hence, all I know is managing people and managing processes and managing the customer. How do I transition out of this into something that I will do completely on my own?
Hmm.
Like, I don't have any transferable skills, do I? And so it did take quite a bit of effort to then say, hey, these are the skills that I used. These are the skills that I've sharpened. And these are the skills that I want to continue using. Mm. And then there's this big chunk that I may need to now learn.
So is there a soul searching notebook somewhere where you actually made a note of all these things? And listeners, if you're searching your souls very deeply, please do remember to hit follow while you're at it. Thank you so much.
There are a lot of transferable skills which we don't realize. And that's a great starting point. And the other thing that I did was a SWOT in kind of a reverse fashion. Because typically in a SWOT, we sit down and say, okay, what are my strengths? What can I do? What can I not do? And hence, what opportunities do I chase? And when I did that, it was a very limiting view because the strength was, hey, I know finance, I know banking systems, I know regulations. But when I only go from that strength, then the options in front of me were like to join another bank or at that time, a lot of payment banks were coming up, a lot of fintech startups were coming up. So it would have taken me down that path.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's what my soul was searching for at that point. So only when I flipped it to say, let's start with the opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm.
What's the gap out there that I could look at? And for someone with my level of years in the industry and for someone with the kind of networks that I had and the kind of interest that I had, I started with something as simple as mentoring women coming back to their career, because women succeeding in the workplace was a gap/opportunity. And it was something that I had seen from close range. And so looking at it from an opportunity perspective then also led to, okay, what are corporates looking for? They are looking for experts who've been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, who've actually led teams and are not coming at it from a theoretical viewpoint. And so that helped. Helped make some connections and start some early programs and workshops, etc. So starting with what is the market need can completely flip the equation.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I think the more logical way of making that decision seems to be to start with ourselves, right? But I think this is quite interesting. And I like what you said about not knowing the magnitude of that transition, which is why you're probably even able to look from the outside in. And that's quite fascinating, which brings up a bunch of questions. But I wanted to ask you the big question first. Will you be making a t-shirt that says there's only so much searching of the soul that you can do?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I will buy one.
If five people, you know, maybe comment saying that they will buy one, then it's on.
You'll make it. Yes. Let's make it happen.
And that brings me to another t-shirt idea. There's a lovely Mary Oliver quote which says, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Wow.
That kind of hits hard when you're in these phases of wondering what's happening with my life.
I think there's a promise there that the leap itself is valuable, irrespective of whether. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and then you can leap again if it doesn't work.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the youngest generation at the workforce really knows that it's going to be several leaps and several highs and several lows. My generation at the workforce is only now realizing that because they're in their 30s, 40s, losing jobs, technology is getting outdated. They're competing with a younger crowd. And because some leaps were not attempted earlier, it is genuinely daunting now.
I can only imagine, yeah. So, Subha, we know now that a career is not a linear thing that you do from the beginning of your 20s till the end of your retirement. There are so many options. And at some point or the other, we are all going to be called into doing something about those options and opportunities. Where do you begin?
The first step we've, in a way, talked about, saying, do that little bit of introspection. What are your skills? What are your interests? What's happening in the world around you? What excites you? So if you find that you're gravitating towards certain kind of stories, articles, you're listening to certain kind of people, there's something there.
Yeah.
So pay close attention to that. And then start researching. Fundamentally, the homework has to be done. You know, it's not going to just
appear.
It's not going to appear. Meet with people or talk to a lot of people. And if you remember, I mean, that's how we met, right? I was starting to build something. You were starting to expand your scope of work and the kind of people you work with. And we were just out there at a industry event, right?
Yeah.
A free industry.
Lunch was good.
Yeah. So I spent maybe the first 5-6 months along with some work that came along just being out there going to a lot of startup pitch events, not because I was going to make the next new app or anything, but just to see, hey, what's this generation doing? What are they talking about? What are their challenges? Who are they?
Right.
And that helped me a lot in the journey that I subsequently took. And in the people that I subsequently worked with. So one, put yourself out there. And yes, you may still be at your full-time job and most likely you are. So, you know, make times in the evenings and the weekends and find some opportunity to speak to people and meet people and talk to them, ping them on LinkedIn, whatever it takes. Also find ways to experiment with some of these roles, right? Maybe volunteer somewhere or say, you know, take up a non-paid gig somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that will give you a sense of, okay, what I'm looking for seems to be this, this, this. Now, what are my skill gaps? And how can I plan to fill that gap? Because if that gap is significant or large enough, maybe it means taking a year off to do that learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then that has to go into your subsequent planning, financial and otherwise. The other piece is that many of us who leave corporate especially, we lose that large chunk of our identity.
Hmm.
And so you have to get ready to market yourself.
Yeah. It's not that easy. Just telling people that, hey, this is what I do now. It's not the easiest thing to do, actually.
Hmm. So you won't have that perfect introduction to yourself. You won't have maybe that, you know, perfect answer as to why are you in this room. It's okay. I think this journey is also highly emotional. It's not a purely cognitive journey. It's not about just the logistics. You have to manage the fears, the uncertainty that you will face, some of the setbacks. You will apply to a few places. You may not get accepted. And you have to be able to have those conversations saying, this is why. And you can do that only if you have a sense of this is why. I was listening to Harsha Bogle the other day. And I mean, he started as what, engineer MBA.
Right.
And he's not really played cricket.
Yeah.
But that's not what the job needs. He needs to give you insightful cricket analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the skill set to do that.
Right.
And he's developed that skill set
over a period of time.
Yeah. But he's made that leap of faith. Right. So there are a lot of transitions which you can look around and see examples. And today when you look at the opportunity that even LinkedIn gives you, you meet somebody and you're seeing them in a certain role. And then you say, hey, who is this person? And you go and look at their LinkedIn profile and it started completely somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's really interesting. I mean, even it's a very large example, but even if you look at Jeff Bezos, he talks about how he was in a very high-paying finance job. And he said, I want to leave this. And this is my idea. And I think buying books online is going to become big, etc. Mm. And at that time, nobody was
able to even see
even,
it. Yeah.
Even see it, right? So a lot of these changes have a lot of learning for us. There are even those who, you know, have kind of gone the other way, in the sense that once you move from corporate to entrepreneur, doesn't mean that you're stuck in that forever, because whatever you do may click, or you may just say, okay, it's time is over.
And that's actually a big thing on definitely my mind and a lot of people's mind, is that it's not the most socially acceptable thing to come back into the workplace.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of them do it because, let's say, you know, you sell and then the new company brings you on board as a senior leader, continuing to run what you run. But typically those folks lose steam.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like
because it's not the same ecosystem
not the same.
Anymore. Yeah.
So, I mean, Facebook bought Instagram. They stuck around for a while, but value systems, the way they wanted to do things, and then they moved on to something else. Even the CEO of Adobe, he started in Apple and then he founded a company. And then he joined the corporate, and he didn't jump at the CEO level. He held multiple positions before becoming the CEO. So there are a lot of such examples. I think open your mind first.
Yeah. What would be your recommendation to someone on whose mind it's probably been for a while? And let's say I take out a week and I say, I'm going to really think about it. What should I do?
Yeah. No. So just, I think, putting together everything that we spoke about today, one is usually there's a trigger, right? So when you start feeling like you need change, you want change, or circumstances are pushing you towards change, latch onto it a bit and dig deeper and see, where is this coming from? What is it telling you? What else are you paying attention to? And use that as a starting point to say, okay, now in this context, what am I feeling? What would I like to be doing? What are the skills that I have picked up over the years? And not just, you know, functional, like, don't just give it functional names, but dig deep into, what exactly am I doing here? If I had to tell a 5-year-old, what really do I do in this job? And hence, what is my skill sets? And then start looking for people, organizations, opportunities. So give yourself time to create that kind of basket of information for yourself, which you will then experiment with. And
that's interesting. Yeah. To really, I think, make it a playground and maybe have a bit of positive inclination towards the whole thing, instead of seeing it as a, oh my God, I have to do it in the next 3 months or six months. Or I think get a little more intentional about it, I guess.
Yeah. And so give yourself timelines. And how long can you experiment, and by when do you need to decide, etc. Being a little on the generous side, I feel like, don't be too hard on yourself and expect that in 3 months you would have cracked the code and you'll know exactly what you want to do and would have also found that job, etc. So even if it means that on the path to that, there's something interim.
Do it.
Do it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Or maybe it'll just land on me. Who knows?
Just go and stand at the edge of a cliff and then maybe,
and see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens.
No, don't do that.
Don't try this at home, please.
What you can try is to subscribe, follow, you know, do all of those things that make our hearts very happy. You can do that.
Yes, you can. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Hey, small talkers. Thanks for listening. I hope you take away something useful from this episode. And if you're in the middle of a career transition, wish you well. If you have any questions for me, drop me a note at subha@raincraft.in with the subject Dear Coach, and I'll be happy to listen to it and answer it in our next episode. Please do remember to share, subscribe, follow, and do leave us a nice rating or review. It really helps us move up the charts and reach more and more small talkers. Bye.